It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my goodness!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
Okay, hey everybody, welcome in. It is the Patrick Johnson Show, 94.3 The Game, and 94.3thegame.com. IBX Media app is where we are. You can download that, Google Play in the App Store, and that has been an especially helpful thing for people this year because they've been able to listen to ECU sporting events when they've been away and out of Eastern North Carolina, or if they're out of the Greenville market and the baseball game does not have any kind of television or it's on ESPN Bolivia, otherwise known as Flow Sports, then you have the opportunity to listen to the game there. And anyway, that is what is happening. Dom, I'm giving a thumbs up to your reply there. So good call there, buddy. And just wanted to make sure you got that. Speaking of Dom, the great Dom Kosolke joins us here on the Patrick Johnson Show. He is a finished man with his third year of college.
Going into senior year.
That's right. Because you turned 21, and before you turned 21, not a drop of alcohol had touched those young lips.
You know,
and not that many does now. Not a lot does now. Dom is a rule follower.
Oh yeah,
you're 100%. A rule follower, Dom.
You're
a rule, except the time you got those waters, but I won't bring that up. All right. Dom Kosolke, producer.
You were laughing at me for
today.
That.
That was pretty good. I thought that was pretty clever. Actually, that's something I would have done, not just in college, but I probably would have done it now. So I respect. Respect for you, Dom. Thanks for being with us here today. Lots to get into. There's some more on how maybe people at the ECU level will be affected by this NCAA revenue share. I'll get to that in a second. We've got some sound from earlier today, or from earlier with Kurt Herbstreit on kind of where all that is going now. Brian Mull will join us. Of course, we have Ezra Azar rumored. We know he visited NC State, and the NC State media folks feel pretty strong that Ezra may wind up there. After 2 years in Greenville as a Pirate out of the portal. The portal did close today, and we'll hear from Joe Sampson, who was earlier on the Hoist the Colors radio show, on just how the Pirates fared from a football perspective with the portal and what are some needs that need to be addressed as well. My Carolina Hurricanes advanced. I'm back firmly on the bandwagon.
They're yours now again.
After they knocked off the Islanders 6-3. And they win the series 4-1. They will advance to take on the New York Rangers. So they dispatch of one New York team. They will play another one. Can you look, Dom, and see if the game won in that series has been announced?
I will.
Because if the Rangers beat them, then I'm off the bandwagon again. So I need to know how many days I get to be on the bandwagon before a possibility of leaving it again.
You have a few days at least. Let me check.
Yeah, I don't think it's a week or anything, but I think it's going to be a few days. So just let me know that. I don't know the backstory to this. I don't know the origins to this, but I'm always here for a good Coach Prime piece of drama. You know, we had the thing a couple weeks ago, the clip from the former five-star recruit who'd gotten in the portal and said he was looking to go somewhere where you play to win and develop players, not playing for clicks. And I'm here for that all day. Because the whole thing's a big drama, and I love a drama as much as anybody. I love the tea as much as anybody who might watch The Housewives. So some guy, I guess, you still at people? Yes, he added Deion Sanders today on X. Tell your son, stop act like he the coldest out here, then put up a 4-8 season. So that is from Pre-Time KB on X. He tweeted at Coach Prime. Coach Prime then quote tweets him in response. He will be a top five pick. Where yo son going? LOL, OLOL. I got time today. LOL. So we now are where Coach Prime is clapping back on Twitter. I love it. Fantastic. Great stuff. I'm here for it all day. Dom, did you find what you're looking for or what I was requesting?
I don't think it's out yet, but I
do have a comment on
Deion Sanders. I don't think Shador is going to be top five, and I think that'll be a freezing cold take eventually.
There's no way he's going to be top five.
I mean, he's projected to be top five. One of the first quarterbacks taken is what I've seen, but I don't think he's going to be.
No. This was the big quarterback year draft where you had six of the first 12 picks quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think next year it's just going to fall off the quarterback. Yeah, that's why everyone kind of reached. I mean, they had to, because next year, even if you're not good, it's not strong.
Yeah. He might be one of the top five quarterbacks taken, and that might be what Prime will tell you he said.
Oh, yeah, that's not what he's saying, though.
That's not what he's saying. He's saying he's going in the top five, and that Shakur is not going in the top five. You're exactly right about that. Let's see here. Fascinated by this revenue sharing discussion. We went through it some yesterday. And Ross Dellinger with Yahoo Sports did a really good, lengthy, in-depth piece on it yesterday. What does this mean? And what happens with G5 teams, group of five teams? Again, this is a situation where in the House case, you have the NCAA and institutions being sued because of putting caps on name, image, and likeness. It's a $4 billion suit. The settlement would be what several administrators describe as permissive, according to what Dellinger wrote, talking about the G5. A school does not have to share $20 million with its athletes, but the agreement opens the door to give schools the freedom to do so. In a competitive market fueled by recruiting of high school and college transfers, schools will naturally jockey to offer athletes as much as they can. Most Group of Five and FCS football programs do not generate a profit, and their athletic departments are subsidized by university and student fees. There are programs at the G5 level where $20 million in revenue sharing would nearly eclipse their entire department revenue for the year. Now, that's yes, and I don't think it's that dire at East Carolina. Again, we're going to have John Gilbert on Tuesday, so I'm going to ask him about this. You really think about the four power school conferences as different? The attorney representing House said this month, the reason we get tied in knots is because we conflate those schools who have developed these gigantic independent commercial businesses with schools who are still just educational institutions with extracurricular activities. When you try to come up with one rule for all, you go crazy. You have to look at the schools differently. For the ones with the money, there is plenty of money to compensate the athletes and share it with women's sports. Many G5 athletic directors hold such fear that this new revenue sharing model would put them so far behind that they're at least toying with the idea of holding their own postseason tournament. Kurt Herbstreit was on Outkick today. And one of the things that Herbie talked about was, he played obviously well before NIL, played at Ohio State. He just talked about having to make it off of his scholarship and that experience and what it was like for him in college. Play it.
The amount of money some of these guys are making, I think some of it's a little bit blown out of proportion. Sometimes you hear, especially in social media, how much money some of these guys are making. According to just talking to these guys behind the scenes, off the record, from what you and I were making on our scholarship check, I came from no money. So, if you didn't qualify in my day for a Pell Grant and you didn't have family money and you basically lived off your scholarship, which is what I did, my dad occasionally would give me a couple $100 a month to be able to, go out to eat or whatever with my girlfriend or go to a movie. But if you didn't have that Pell Grant or you didn't have family money, you're getting by just barely if you're living in an apartment with three other guys. And, there's something weird. I know I'm from a different generation like you. I kind of liked it. I didn't come from any money. I thought it was pretty cool to have roommates and you know, us ordering pizza and just kind of around. I didn't think it was awful. I thought it was great. I thought living in college and being a guy that was just barely getting by, you know, I thought it was great. Now, I will say this. It's a totally different era. You know, we're in the no longer the millions. And look at this. You know, I don't know what John Cooper was making. I think assistant coaches when I was at Ohio State were making like $35,000. You know, the amount of money that's coming into the system now, we're talking about multiple billions of dollars. So I'm not sitting here saying it, that they shouldn't get money. I'm just saying for me, on my personal journey, not having money, it was never really, I didn't know any better. I didn't really care. I just liked hanging out with my teammates and I enjoyed college. You know, it wasn't easy for me. I had you know, some stuff to get through on the field as a player. But I definitely enjoyed my time. I didn't look at a woe is me and, man, this sucks. That was not my experience at all.
And that's the way the vast majority of college kids are living. You know, at least that's kind of how I lived in college. I know we got guys that are on staff that are college guys. Dom's one of them. I'm not saying Dom's is church poor as a church mouse, but I mean, Dom's got to work.
Dom's
got to do other things. Yeah. Dom's not coming from oil money.
No, it's a fun time. I mean, I'm not a college athlete, but I'm working with sports. Right. You know, I can put myself in those shoes.
But I mean, and I think Herb Street addresses this here. He addressed it a little bit there. This is just a different kind of mindset. Last clip from Herbie on Outkick today talked about kind of, you know, maybe these college athletes are missing out on certain things. Hit it.
One thing I worry about these players is they chase this short-term money, is they miss out on those life experiences. You know, that to me is what college is about. And I have four sons, and just like you have kids. And my hope is that for all college, if these kids go to college, like you got to plant some roots. You know, you don't want to just go because things are bad, because even if you go to the NFL, and most of them don't, but if you do, almost all these guys, when they're done playing, they all eventually come back to where they went to college, where their buddies are and where their roots are. And it's just a new era. And I hope for these guys that they think about more of the long term and not just, hey, how much are you going to pay me for NIL? I'm going there. You miss out on some of these stories of Uwe Blob, you know, passed out on a couch. Yeah. My experiences. I mean, that's what life's about, man, is having life experiences.
Now, Herbie's well compensated doing the NFL and Game Day and ESPN and ABC. So, I mean, I don't think that's changed his perspective on college that much. But it's it's a business now. And there's got to be a balance between what is going on at the institutional level, the NCAA level, and the students. I mean, should they be getting $1 million? You know, I don't know. I think just the problem with the discrepancy right now is going to be on the level of, with this rev share, the haves and the have-nots, and everybody's got it. You got to be in the game. You got to be in the game. We'll talk to Brian Mull about that. I also have a couple other things I want to discuss with him. We'll get some golf locks for him, kind of a slow period before we get into things later in the month. But we'll do that when we come back. And this is the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
You ready for this?
Oh, I'm very ready.
Okay, ready?
You ready?
Streaming to the world at 94.3thegame.com. This is the Patrick Johnson Show. Now in all his glory, here's the P-Man.
All right, coming up tomorrow from 5 to 7 along Red Banks Road, it'll be an open house for East Carolina Weight Loss. And I'll be out there, John Moore from... Sock Hop on 107.9 will be there. Other luminaries in the world of radio will be there for this open house. And if you want to know anything about East Carolina Weight Loss, this is probably the event you want to attend. 5 to 7, there's no obligation, but you can get your questions answered, and I would really urge you to do so. Look, I've lost officially 46 pounds since my unfortunate heaviest, more than that. And I still have a summer to go to obtain my goal, and I'm on a good path. So just got my labs a couple weeks ago, had my annual checkup with my doctor, and everything was stellar, which was great to hear as far as things like A1C and cholesterol and all of those things that you measure. Outstanding. So if you want to lose a pound of fat a day, and you can lose 20 to 30 pounds in a month or two, you can go to eastcarolinaweightloss.com. Mention me when you do, or call 252-496-3610, 252-496-3610, or tomorrow after work, buzz on over to the location on Red Banks and check it out. Open house, again, no obligation there, and it gives you a chance to kind of see what everything is all about, and hopefully it would be something that would work for you and be as successful for you as it has been for me. Let's go now to the Port City of Wilmington. Brian Mull, golf and college hoops writer, joins us here on the Patrick Johnson Show. Mull, how's it going?
Going well, Patrick. Good to see you, and good to be back.
Nice to have you here. A couple things I wanted to talk about before we get into some golf talk, and there's a huge thing with Liv that is just comical almost, but we'll get to all of that in due time. Pac Pride reporting. In fact, they did their crystal ball report. My guy Corey Smith went there with the crystal ball. Ezra Azar visiting officially NC State earlier in the week. And I think at least from the Pac Pride perspective, they feel really strongly that Azar would be is going to be in a Wolfpack uniform. I don't know if they're smoking the hopium or what, but we'll see. How would that marriage be? Ezra in Raleigh, and what would State could well, and you know Keats as well as anybody, can Azar, who's not a noted defender, play in that system and have success?
I see him as a solid rotational piece, you know, adding some depth to the front court for NC State. I agree with you. Defensively, I wonder how effective he can be in the ACC, where the front courts are going to be even better than what he faced in the American. You know, Ezra has a lot of talent, maybe needed a change of pace, but as far as coming in and being a real difference maker for the Wolfpack, I don't know that he's going to have to show me more than what he showed me last year. You know, again, possibly he could come in there, might be the system maybe a little better for him, a little more tempo might allow him to not get as exposed as he did in some half-court situations. So solid pickup for Kevin Keats, who is bearing the fruits of the Final Four run.
Yeah, and, you know, I know we were talking on the morning show and saying my co-host on that, the great Henry Hinton, the legend, winner, the Hall of Famer, said, you know, you've got this whole pack roster is they're going to lose everybody. Well, look, if anything, what happened in Raleigh was they had to up their game with the Final Four run. They had to put some NIL into that, not just put it into football. So he's going to have guys. And if Azar's a rotational guy, that's a good pickup, I think, for Keats. Now, if he's got to rely on Ezra, who I like, but if he's got to rely on Ezra, it could be a long year in Raleigh. So
Agreed. We'll
see. Yeah. Reported the other night, we've talked about it here a little bit, the NCAA revenue share that's being discussed with the party to the lawsuit, those lawyers and the NCAA and its lawyers, which there's nothing in the building in Indianapolis but lawyers, the president of the NCAA, and then you've got the big P5, now P4 brokers. I'm going to still call them P5. With all of that said, what's the happy medium here?
The NCAA desperately wants to settle this case, and which would kind of have an effect on the other pending lawsuits. They want to settle this out of court because they're not going to win. I think they're all aware of that. All the conference commissioners, Charlie Baker has informed them that they really don't have a very good case. And if they are in a situation where the court is demanding them, it's going to be much more expensive. We're in the billions here with the B. There's a lot of money, of course, the back pay to former players. So I think they have to settle it at a reasonable amount. I mean, talking about possibly the figure I keep hearing, you know, kicked around is the P4 schools receiving, you know, $20 million or having to pay out $20 million annually. You know,
which you don't have to do, but you have the freedom to do so. We just talked about that on the Dellinger right. article. I mean, you can choose not to do that, but you have the freedom to do that, I guess.
And, you know, the SEC and the Big Ten are certainly sitting in a great advantageous situation with their television money that's guaranteed through, you know, the next decade or so. Fewer concerns there, maybe a little bit more pressure on the ACC. You know, this is just a shift. This is the tectonic plates are moving in college athletics, and this is the new future. And I think everyone can agree, whether it's a school president or a conference commissioner or basketball coach, NCAA president, anyone can agree that the current system just is not working. And, you know, the players have earned and deserve a piece of the pie, and they've got to come up with some type of viable system going forward as college athletics shifts completely away from the farcical amateur model and into what it is, which is professional or semi-professional sports.
College hoops writer, golf writer Brian Mull with us at BG Mull on X, if you're so inclined. All right, you're a advocate for the little guy. I mean, the mid-major guy. You cover a lot of that in basketball in particular. I mean, how is this going to work for, you know, never mind teams in the American, but I mean, like, for the UNCWs of the world and the Old Dominions of the world and those kind of schools?
Yeah, I mean, I saw an interesting report earlier this week that 41 of the top 50 rated mid-major players on an efficiency basis from last season are in the transfer portal, you know, players who had eligibility remaining. And so basically what that tells you is that these schools are now a farm system, and the coaches at this level are participating. They're buying players just like the player, you know, they're just buying Hyundais instead of Cadillacs at their level.
got to have a car.
But you got to have a car, and none of them are free unless you go on the Price is Right. And, you know, they're basically, look, everybody's year to year. I think that's been the biggest difference in we're so used to our college teams and even our pro teams having players there for an extended amount of time. But I think now it's year to year at every school. I mean, if seven players are going in the transfer portal at Duke, then nobody's immune. And if you're a mid-major, if you're in the Southern Conference or the CAA, if you're UNC Wilmington or UNC Greensboro, you're looking at getting a player hopefully for 2 years. And it may be a very talented high school player that you get for his first 2 years, and then he moves on to greener pastures that you're just not going to be able to compete with from an NIL perspective. Or you catch a guy that has started at a lower level or maybe went to the higher level of, you know, an ACC school and couldn't get in the rotation, and he drops back down and you get him for 2 years on the back end. But, you know, anything much beyond that is just not reasonable. Just so many puzzling decisions, but they're all motivated by money. And, you know, when you've got coaches in the Southern Conference telling me that they're buying players, obviously the rate that they're paying is not the same as some of these figures that are being thrown around at Arkansas and places of that nature. But that's just the market that it is. And they have limited money. They have to spend wisely, and they have to get difference makers out of the portal. And those guys aren't coming for free.
Do you see, you know, I know the again, so-called G5 has kicked around their own idea of their own postseason championship. And here's the reality. I mean, I know you mentioned the SEC and Big Ten. There's even schools in that aren't going to be able to shop at the really off the really high-dollar menu when it comes to this school's paying NIL. I mean, all 14 or 18 or whoever, however the hell these conferences have now, all of the institutions are not going to be on a level play. I mean, we're talking really a finite amount of people in a way, aren't we?
We are. And the money's going to run out. And somebody brought up a good point a week or so ago that these coaches have always been under pressure. I mean, they're making huge salaries, and folks have always, you know, the alumni and the students and the everyone community demands winning. And they're really going to demand winning when they're stroking checks to for the coaches to go buy players and six-figure checks. And they're going to say, okay, we gave you, you said you needed 1.5 in NIL or whatever that figure might be, and we provided it, and you went out and got the guys that you thought you needed to get, and why aren't we in the NCAA tournament? Why aren't we winning the conference? Why aren't we whatever, reading the expectations, reasonable or not? And everybody can't win. I mean, in any sports league, there's teams at the top, middle, and bottom, and there's 68 teams as the tournament stands right now. I know the Big 12 commissioner in particular is wanting to expand that, and we probably will see some expansion at some point, but it's going to be in fewer spots for the little guys, which I think is just going to be hard to see. Virtually no at-large spots, and possibly even some of the automatic bids being taken away down the road. And, you know, these coaches are going to need to get into the NCAA tournament. They have bonuses in their contracts, incentives. We saw how much Kevin Keats made during their run in March, in addition to his base salary. And they're going to need it for job security, because if you're spending $1.5 million of your donors' money on NIL and you're not making the NCAA tournament, you're going to have a very short stint at that particular school.
Well, and if your institution is now kicking in millions of dollars towards an NIL payday too, I mean, there's going to be increased pressure there. All right, shift to golf real quick. We'll get some locks or some suggestions if you want to lay a little action. They were coming off that hideous team event last week, so we just, I mean, you can't. That's so bad. They've got to. It just stinks. The only good thing about that is it's in New Orleans, and you can get some good food. But I mean, other than that, it's just blah. The Byron Nelson Endowment.
Some good music also.
Oh, yeah, some good music. Yeah, Jazz Fest going on. All right. Byron Nelson in Dallas, it's not what it once was. There's no Scottie Scheffler because of his wife's pregnancy. My guy, Will Zalatoris, apparently has tweaked his back. Is there any star power in this event? Is this are we just biding time here? Do we get to the PGA Championship?
The schedule is about to be great. Next week, in particular, next week, but we're not there yet, babe. Next week is an unprecedented week in that we have two PGA Tour events in the Carolinas, with Wells Fargo for the top 70 guys going on, of course, in Charlotte at Quail Hollow, and then the inaugural Myrtle Beach Classic for the rest of the tour players at the Dunes Club, which is by far the best golf course down there. Former host of the Senior Tour Championship for many years. Had some good moments watching Lee Trevino down there back in the day. But anyway, so all the pro golfers will be in the Carolinas pretty close together next week. And of course, we have the PGA at Valhalla, followed by that, and then a couple of the top invitationals. So, but this week is kind of a week that a lot of guys are skipping. It's a shame. What's happened to Lord Byron's tournament? I would say the biggest culprit in Dallas has been the lack of a reasonable golf course. They're a place now called TPC Craig Ranch. I've heard it called Craig Nelson Ranch. It is apparently the worst. They've had major turf issues, had to resod. A couple of players off the record saying it's the worst conditioned course they've played all season, which if you want to keep top tour players away from your tournament, that's the best way to do it. But we do have an event, and they will be paying out first place and FedEx Cup points. And if you do like to bet a little bit, there's some good opportunities this week.
All right, but let's go there then. Give me
Jordan Spieth and Jason Day are your biggest names.
Okay. Give me your if you're inclined to wager, what would you advise? Give me three kind of picks here.
Yeah, I'm going to give you three picks, and then we're going to take a trip down Long Shot Lane also, just for fun.
All right, I like it.
Keith Mitchell is just, you know, he's a guy, he's a veteran. He's consistently one of the best drivers of the golf ball. His iron play has reached another level this year. He has six top 20 finishes already. And, you know, he struggles a little bit around the greens, but I don't think that's going to bother him. He should hit a ton of greens on this golf course. They're just not that difficult to hit. He's plus 180 to top 20. You know, he's second in this field in tee to green, strokes gained. And I just think that that's a nice value play there. I also like Seamus Power, two-time PGA Tour winner at plus 230 to finish in the top 20, which he has done here each of the last 2 years. And he has finished 26th or better in three of his last five starts. He dealt with some injuries last year. Kind of heard an interview with him recently. He said it took him a while just to get comfortable again with his body and with his swing and feeling good. But Seamus was a guy who was on the ascent and then just had that little setback physically, but he's back healthy. And this is also a golf course where he has had success in the past. And then my third pick at plus 190 is Mackenzie Hughes. You know, a couple of things there. Mackenzie's a Canadian. The President's Cup is in Canada this year. He desperately wants to make the team either on points or have enough results to impress Captain Mike Weir. He's already has two top three finishes, including about a month ago down at the Valera, in Tampa, at the Valspar. And he's been playing nice golf. He finished 14th here last year. He's been just trending upward. Mackenzie's always had one of the best short games and been one of the best putters. He's also a two-time winner. But his iron play has really taken a nice spike upward, and I think he'll continue that this week. Another note, he posted on Twitter that he lost a close family friend, apparently had caddied for him. He posted some pictures unexpectedly here in the last week or so. So, you know, maybe a little inspiration there to playing for him. So I like Mitchell, Power, and Hughes to top 20. And then if you want to, you know, sprinkle a few dollars on a longer shot there, there's two guys that stand out. Peter Quest, Quest, is plus 280. This kid's a great story. He has no status, but he just continues to Monday qualify. And when he does Monday qualify, he takes advantage of it. He finishes in the top 10. He gets in, you know, that's how he's in this week. And he's just been able to produce. I think he's a guy that if he could get some status, would have no problems keeping his card. So he's hungry. He has to take advantage of all his opportunities. And then the most probably mispriced golfer on the whole board is Alejandro Tosti, who was in the hunt a couple of weeks ago in Houston. Alejandro is volatile. I think he's in his rookie year on tour. I think he's on his seventh or eighth caddy. He's a bit of a loose cannon. There's a lot of good stories about him. And I mean, he could shoot 150 and miss the cut, but he could also win. He's super talented. He won on the Corn Ferry Tour last year. You know, he might scream at a couple of marshals along. There's no telling. It's must see theater, but this kid's very talented. And in a field of this, you know, this strength, he certainly could get in the hunt and, you know, top 20, or if you're so inclined, maybe even the top 10. They're like, you're looking at like 8-1, which are tremendous odds.
Oh, wow.
But I think, yeah, he's grossly he's over 100-1 outright, and he's grossly underpriced this week. So those are the two trips down long shot lane, and good luck. And I can't wait till next week when we'll have two events to handicap.
All right, do with all that info what you will. Last thing, you mentioned the golf course that the guys are playing on this week. Liv made an announcement yesterday. They are playing on the equivalent of the Falling Creek. The Falling Creek Country Club in Lenoir County might be actually be better.
Don't take a shot at Falling Creek. I love Falling Creek. I've had many enjoyable round there. Yeah, this is Bolingbrook. Last minute, last gasp. They needed some golf course to host their tour championship in the fall, and apparently Bolingbrook was the only place to answer the phone. A longtime Chicago native and golf course architecture aficionado and fine player in his own right, described this as definitely a top 200 course in Chicago. And it's about 30 miles outside of town. I can't believe they're going there for Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson are going to be out there playing golf, and Bryson DeChambeau. But that's just where Liv is, you know. I mean, these tournaments, these championships, they have to be planned out multiple years in advance. You know, the U.S. Opens and Pinehurst, they're 5, 10, 20 years in advance. It's just a procedure to get the golf course not only ready, but to get the agreement from the membership and all the infrastructure in place. So Liv is hopefully this just means we're getting closer to some type of some happy day when all the best golfers are playing in one place instead of scattered all over.
Hey, Mull, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. We'll catch up with you next week for the two events, including Quail Hollow.
Thanks. Thanks, Patrick. Everybody have a great week. Enjoy the golf.
There he goes, Brian Mull. I tell you what, why don't we grab a break, come back, and we'll have Dom Kosolke with a sports update and Pirate Report. Got some portal analysis for ECU from earlier today, and the hero of the night in the sports world last night. We'll play that audio for you, too. That's coming up. But right now, a timeout and Kosolke with an update coming up.
Last week, Jacob Starling returned to the Pirates lineup in the cleanup spot, and he didn't disappoint. His first game back, he hit the cycle against a familiar foe in NC State. Here's what head coach Cliff Godwin had to say during an interview on 94.3 The Game about Starling's performance.
He actually, I think, has swung the bat better because he slowed the game down after the injury, and probably sitting back and watching helped as well. But I'm going to be honest with you, I had no idea he was even close to the cycle because I was so entrenched into the game. And he actually wasn't running great towards like the fifth, sixth inning. And we had already had conversations about when we needed to get him out of the game. And
this weekend, the Pirates host USF at Clark LeClair Stadium. Game one starts Friday at 6, and you can hear live coverage of the game at 5:45 on 94.3 The Game with Scooter Rogers on the call. East Carolina lacrosse's Francis Kimmel, Ellie Bromley, and Alexandra Giacalone have been named American Athletic Conference All-Conference. Kimmel earned first-team recognition, while Bromley and Giacalone both earned second-team. Number 20 NC State knocked off by UNCW 5-4 in extra innings on Tuesday. The Seahawks sweep the season series from the pack. In other news from NC State, guard Michael O'Connell plans to return for the 2024-25 season. In his 10 postseason starts, he averaged 9.5 points and 3.8 assists. Appalachian State University football player John Jack Murphy has died, the university confirmed Monday. Appalachian State University said in a statement that Murphy died on Friday. The university did not identify a cause of death, but noted that the investigators do not suspect any foul play. The university says there was never any danger to individuals on campus. According to the App State football roster, Murphy was a redshirt junior and offensive lineman from Fairfax, Virginia. The Hurricanes are in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs after beating the Islanders 6-3 in Game 5 at the PNC Arena. Hurricanes head coach Rod Brind'Amour says this was a tight series.
Obviously, it was tight. You know, obviously, playoffs, it's one play here or there that seems to always make the difference in a game. And, you know, tonight we were the fortunate ones to get that bounce.
The Canes will face the New York Rangers in the second round of the playoffs. The NBA playoffs continue tonight, starting with the Celtics and the Heat at 7:30. The Celtics will be without Kristaps Porzingis, who went down last game with a calf injury, and the Heat will lose another starter with rookie Jaime Jaquez down with a hip injury. The Celtics are favored by 14.5 points. On the west side, the Mavericks travel to LA to face the Clippers at 10. Kawhi Leonard will be without the Clippers once again as both teams look to take the lead in the 2-2 series. The Dallas Mavericks are favored by 2.5 points. And that's it for your sports update. Patrick will be right back after this quick break to talk Pirates Portal on 94.3 The Game.
And now, the stunning conclusion of the show. It's the P-Man here on 94.3 The Game.
Okay, earlier today on Hoist the Colors with Steven Igo, Joe Sampson, our own guy Joey Football, was on there. Portal, of course, is closed. And Joey Football talked about how ECU did as far as portal activity. Let's hear it.
Your high leverage positions is really what you're kind of looking for when it comes to the portal. And obviously we went and got two quarterbacks. That was a big thing for us in the offseason and trying to bring them in. But you're not losing a Jeter. You didn't lose one of the quarterbacks because of the competition. You lose one running back. Yes, he was productive, but it's not a Bond. It's not a Gunn. It's not Rajay going for his fifth year somewhere else. They're very replaceable assets in the way that you look at that. And I mean that in no disrespect to anybody that transferred. Camaro's a good friend. But when you look at it as far as numbers on the page, you want to have the, like Moneyball, recreated in the aggregate.
Yeah.
So you're trying to recreate a little bit here. You've got two freshman running backs that came in that you can replace with Camaro in that role. You're hoping Bond is healthy all year, so you're not really going to have a four running back stable. And then you've got your bruiser in Gunn, but you've got Rajay who can kind of go in both of those different ways. And with the new offense, who knows how the run game looks. So I agree.
More from Joe, and he talks about the needs the Pirates may need to address in the portal now that it is closed. And here's the thing about this. With the portal closing in all these sports, this brings a little bit more of the balance back to the way of the schools. In other words, it's, you know, there's really, once you're in the portal, there's nowhere to go. There's more guys than there are spots. So that bargaining power, that negotiating power, a little bit of it returns back to the school. Doesn't mean you're not going to pay for a guy that you really want to get, but it is, you're not going to, unless you're just foolish, you shouldn't overpay for a guy at this point. Unless, I mean, you always can get in a bidding war. But it does return a little bit of the bargaining power to the teams. And here is Joe Sampson on what needs to be addressed for the Pirates.
You can never have enough tackles.
The problem is everybody is trying to find them.
God only makes so many creatures that are 6'8", 315, and run around like a ballerina. But like that's what makes tackles tackles. That's what makes them so versatile and so impressive. And that's why we saw like four of them go in the first round on Thursday. But it's one of those things where, do you want to pay for the tackle? Do you want to develop a tackle? Do you want to go get a JUCO kid and try and do that experiment again like you just tried to? Billy Malavik panned out for you pretty well. Obviously, some things separated him on that side. But you've had some good showings from junior college players that could lead you to believe in that. Julius Wood was a junior college player. We can go get that pipeline. I don't necessarily think you need to add anybody. I think the roster's a pretty safe space right now. I'd love to add a tackle. Obviously, you'd love to add another tight end with Ferguson also now hitting the portal. I want a little more depth. You've got, I think it's three scholarship tight ends on the roster right now.
Yeah.
Three scholarship tight ends on the roster right
four
now.
Four when they're adding Nick Slojic, a freshman, but right. Still, I think you want to add another
guy. You want to add another depth guy, God forbid, so he can be a special teams player in that punt unit or something like that. But I don't necessarily think you need another DB. DBs are always good to have. You may want another safety just in case a Devin goes down, just in case a Nash goes down, one of those types of things. But I think the roster's in a pretty good spot. If it shows up, it's like a extra present on Christmas morning. You're never upset to get it.
Yeah, I think offensive line, you got to figure out a way to address that, the JUCO route. I think at this point, needing that, since that's a position, a little bit of need, a tackle, you're going to have to go pay for a guy, or you're going to have to get a JUCO guy in and maybe still pay for him. I think trying to build that, especially since it's a position of need now with a high school kid, is that could be a little dicey. So last night there was a game between the Dodgers, I believe, and the Diamondbacks, and it was delayed because a bee colony was forming over the protective netting. So they went out and got a beekeeper, and this is what the open was like on Bally Sports, with a video package complete of the beekeeper doing his job, and he even got to throw out the first pitch.
Hero of the day, Matt Hilton is his name, and he has lived it up. They were chanting MVP. They were playing I Need a Hero, and he was that hero. He got the place clear. And just a moment ago, he threw out the ceremonial first pitch. They just announced that he's going to be available for interviews in the press box at 8:45. Matt Hilton, 37-year-old, father of four, movie star, good looks, now a superstar.
There you go. Cool stuff. The High School Athletic Association, by the way, just I think we've retweeted it. Go check out our Twitter. It's just the way they you heard the narration there, but when you see all the video of it and what he was having to do to extract the bee colony and then getting in, I think he was in his beekeeper suit when he threw out the first pitch, which was really cool. The High School Athletic Association conducting its upcoming realignment. That includes moving to eight classifications. The association will operate under the proposed Big 32 model. NCHSAA Board of Directors voted unanimously, 17-0, to adopt the Big 32 model following a recommendation from the Bylaws Committee. The Big 32 model means the largest 32 schools will go into 8A. The remaining schools will go into the other classifications based on their enrollment. All classification assignments will be made based solely on the average daily number membership of a school. The realignment committee will use the ADM numbers from the 24-25 school year. Those numbers will be released in the fall. The Believe 32 model is believed will lessen the ADM discrepancies between schools in a single classification. It will allow the NCHSA to push smaller schools down to lower classifications and will provide more equities in schools. The 8A playoffs would have 24 to 28 team brackets. The 2 to 7A playoffs would have a 32-team bracket. The 1A would have a 16-team bracket. So in football, I don't know if that would be – that'd be at least a week off for the 1As, a bye week, kind of a built-in bye week for everybody before they fire it up. That 8A is going to be – that's not going to have an effect on anybody in Eastern North Carolina. That's going to be Charlotte, maybe some Raleigh schools and some Triad area schools. That's going to be your Big 32. So, I mean, essentially a Charlotte – or an I-85 championship is what that's going to be. So that's what they're going to do. That'll be the Big 32 model, and I think that's I think everybody, particularly in football and basketball, will be really happy about that. I don't see anything in this, and I got to read it a little further. Have they done anything to address the charter school situation? Does it look like in this that they have? And that's the big thing, especially for smaller schools. You have a ton of what are now 1A charter schools, and they have a larger area from which they can bring students in. All right, that will wrap it for today's show. Don't forget, on Monday, we're going to have Mike Houston in the studio with us. So looking forward to having Coach. We'll also hear from Cliff Godwin that day and for some future planning as well. John Gilbert will be our guest on Tuesday before the Duke baseball game between East Carolina and the Blue Devils. I meant to mention this. We'll maybe get into this a little more tomorrow, but D1 Baseball released their projections, and they've got ECU as an 8. And all the fans are just going nuts. They think they should be like a 5 or a 6 where others have had them. Thanks to Dom Kosolke. We'll talk about all that with Mike Mullis tomorrow. I'll catch you in the morning on Talk of the Town on 103.7 WTIB and 96.3 and the IBX Media app. And then back here tomorrow for the Patrick Johnson Show. Don't forget the open house 5 to 7 tomorrow at East Carolina Weight Loss in Greenville. Have a good evening, everybody.